Jeff Jarvis, I'd like to ask you about the role of the journalists in the future. So did I get you right that you said they have to become something like platform builders or something like this?
I think that the internet enables communities to share information on their own. And that's going to happen with or without us in media. And that's good, because, by the way, it's going to reduce our costs. It's going to increase the flow of information. We as journalists then need to ask how we add value to that process. How do we, and the most important value we can add is reporting, is going to ask the questions that aren't in that flow of information. How do we debunk rumors? How do we add context? Those are the things journalists have to do to make themselves more valuable.
But the journalists are used to work in between brands, yes? So, and how can we do it on Twitter or Facebook? How can we add content there?
Easily, because the link gives us that power. And the journalist really ends up with a better relationship with members of the public, not as a mass, but as individuals. And we can serve them more relevance, and people will distribute us. They'll pass us around. They'll inform us. They'll help us in all kinds of ways. We have to be open to doing that now.
Is that what you mean with we have to embrace the new distribution models? Is that what you mean?
Absolutely. There's a small new company in the U.S. that has something called Repost.us that turns an article into a YouTube video. Well, why shouldn't our articles go around and be embedded everywhere on Google Plus and Facebook and blogs? That's the way we have to change our thinking in terms of our models and stop thinking that we have to get everyone to come to us as they did in the old days of media.
Ah, so we bring our content in the other. So, but will we have still brands like Spiegel or New York Times? And all these?
Yes, we will absolutely still have brands. Brands will be institutions, brands will be individuals. But brands will be made more on merit, that people care about them, that they like them, they like what they're saying, they respect them or trust them, and they pass them around. And just because you have been a big old brand for the last 100 years doesn't mean you deserve to be one for the next 100 years.
But how do you think, how can we earn money in the future? Also with these brands or with new brands, or what are the business models?
Well, I'll tell you, the worst business model is to try to protect the past. And that's what I see happening in Germany with the Leistungsschutzrecht. The idea that we can try to restrict the link online because these big old media brands don't like the fact that Google makes money. This is dangerous to the architecture of the internet itself, and I'm very concerned about the Leistungsschutzrecht and how it may spread elsewhere. So you might say, well, what should the relationship of a publisher be to Google? I think we should learn from Google, and that Google teaches us how to have valued relationships with individuals, not with masses of people. And content has value still, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you get its value just by selling it. You also get value out of content. Google does, Facebook does, out of content becoming a signal generator about people. Tells them who we are, where we are, what we want to know, what we don't know, and so on. And that allows them to serve those individuals better. The problem in media is we don't have a relationship with individuals. Yeah, we charge them money, but that's not knowing them. That's not really having a good relationship of trust. We have to learn from Google and Facebook instead of fighting them and fighting their use of the opportunities that the internet provides. And that's what concerns me most about the old institutions right now, is they're in a mode of desperation and they're using government to try to protect their old models, and in the process they could hurt the internet.
But Google and Facebook, they are earning money with advertising. Can the classical media this also do with advertising? Or what do you think about paywalls, for example?
I think advertising will most certainly continue, and in fact could be more valuable if media properties know their readers, viewers better, and have a more relevant value to them for both content and for marketers. So yes, advertising has value. Paywalls, listen, I will happily sell you my books, both out in German. I will sell you content. We'll always pay for movies and things like that. But it's hard to charge for information, because information does just travel around. And so I'm dubious that paywalls are going to be some panacea for us in media, because they build on the old media model of thinking that what we do is we sell content. And we manufacture content. In fact, we manufacture it on presses. That's an old model. What if we think of journalism instead as a service? Now, a service, put it this way, content is that which fills something. Content fills pages or fills hours. Service is that which accomplishes something, which informs people, which helps them in their lives. If we were measured on our service versus our manufacturing of content, then perhaps maybe we could charge people for it. Or maybe we have such a deep relationship with someone, we know them better, we can get more value out of it. We've got to explore that first before we try to shut down future opportunities by trying to preserve old models.
Okay, we can charge it then for this then, but how? Also with a paywall, or how it's possible to imagine this?
The problem with a paywall is also that we want, Arthur Sulzberger here at DLD, the head of the New York Times, said we want to be more engaged with people. And so if we get more engaged, suddenly what do we do to thank you? We put a wall up in front of you. I don't know that that's the best way. The New York Times can do it because the New York Times is that good. I pay for the New York Times. I happily pay for it. But frankly, some of the smaller newspapers around me aren't worth paying for. So I'm not suggesting that just because people used to pay for content, that's the model that has to continue. In some cases, it will. Here's the paradox. Content that brings you information that is valuable to your life or your community. You know, is it going to snow tomorrow? Are the schools closed? Is the power out? That kind of content, very valuable to your life, but very hard to charge for because the information will just pass around. There's other kinds of content. There's a really fascinating, long article that you read about someone who's off in the jungles of somewhere exploring. Now, you may not ever go to a jungle. It doesn't really affect your life. So it's really kind of entertainment, which is not a bad thing. The irony is, the paradox is, the things that are really valuable to your life are probably information, and information is hard to charge for. The things that are less valuable to your life but maybe compelling are entertainment, and entertainment is easier to charge for. So the things that we most want to preserve in journalism are probably the hardest to charge for.
But then I pay something, so they tell me, oh, if you want to see that or if you want to have this entertainment, you have to pay €5 or something like that.
The problem with that, too, is that that brings a cost. I'm from the magazine industry as well as the newspaper industry, and I learned well that there is what we call a subscriber acquisition cost. If you're going to charge someone for something, whether that's a magazine or a newspaper or shampoo, you have to market to get them to know about it, and so there's a high cost there. So it's not as simple as saying, aha, we can just put up a wall and people will pay us. No, as the New York Times itself has learned, they have to market, they have to deal with customers who leave, they have to deal with customer service, there's a cost too. In certain cases, like the New York Times, I think it will work and work well, and people will pay for it because it's that good. But you better be damned good if you think you're going to be able to charge. And there are other ways to make money today, including advertising, including events, including new ways to use this data. And also, very importantly, there are a lot of new ways to save money. Because in the old days, if you were a newspaper in a big city, you had to deliver the whole world to that city. Well, with the internet, you don't have to do that anymore. You can do a lot less, and that makes it more efficient to operate. And that's not a very pleasant thing to talk about because it probably means fewer journalists at that publication, but it's the way the publication might survive.
So I try to imagine, but I have to think it over. I can't imagine everything. So, but one last question. How do you say Leistungsschutzrecht in English? We asked this ourselves on Twitter, but nobody knew.
Weiß nicht. I'm told it translates as ancillary copyright. But it's a lot more fun to scare Americans when I say Leistungsschutzrecht, even if I say it badly.
Can we repeat it in English once more, please?
Ancillary copyright.
Ancillary
copyright. Ancillary, an extra copyright, an additional copyright that rides on side. I don't know if that's a good translation or not. That's just what I've heard.
Thank you very much.